Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello, football folk. It's the Game Day Preview Premier League podcast from Talk Sport. The ultimate preview to every game this weekend with me, Sam Atterface, The Mirror's Darren Lewis, and Talk Sport transfer guru, Alex Crook. Cup chaos, goals everywhere. Chelsea show no mercy, mercy, mercy as their Kai guy gets three against Barnsley. Arsenal helped out by a charitable Christian, and Pickford. Pressure continues after a Fleetwood faff. What does David Moyes' positive COVID-19 test mean for the weekend fixtures? And how can the EFL legitimately continue with their league and cup competitions unless they test on a regular basis? There's the first instalment of Brighton against Manchester United. Can the Seagulls swoop and steal the spotlight from Solskjaer in Sussex? Or after Greenwood provides the tinder for a fiery end to the midweek cup tie, will United have more grammable moments to like, repost and comment upon? Also this week, West Brom face a retooled Chelsea. There's a derby that looks anything but a Yorkshire pudding. And we delve into the TalkSport transfer files and open up Crookie's contact book as Wolves go full Nelson. All on the podcast that, like Luis Suarez, needs a little bit of help with our Italian. The Game Day Premier League Preview Pod from TalkSport. Arrivederci. Oh, actually, that might not be right. That's goodbye, isn't it? Anyone got the number of the Juve switchboard? Dashing Darren Lewis and charismatic Crook are with me. How are we?
Very well. Very well indeed.
You're looking particularly well. I think it should be pointed out to the listener that you are fully suited and booted and looking moisturised and everything.
It's the moisturised bit that I'm worried about, Sam. I have a few meetings this morning, so I decided that I would improve my standard for the Game Day pod, and maybe that might be a feature going forward.
Yeah, is that real meetings or Zoom meetings? Because if I ask you to stand up, are you still wearing your pyjamas? Oh, no, full trousers. Thank God for that. Alex Crook, not looking as dapper, but certainly no less influential. How are we?
I'm good. I'm still chuckling to myself about how excited you got about Chelsea's demolition of Barnsley and Kai Havertz, to the extent that I had to text you and say, sorry, are you playing Barnsley or Bayern Munich?
Let's move on. Can we talk about our highlights for the week, our four-word highlights of the week? Darren, what have you got for me?
Crook puts off Townsend.
Oh, yes, that was very good. That was Andros Townsend taking a penalty in a shootout a week and a bit ago in the Carabao Cup and saying that all he could hear as he was walking up to the spot was Alex Crook saying, and here's TalkSport's Andros Townsend. And he said it actually increased the pressure on him, Crook.
Yeah, well, you know, I demand high standards. Luckily for him, he scored, so he did the job.
It was the Crook what won it.
Hey. Alex, what you got for me?
Solskjaer not good enough would be my four-word assessment of last weekend.
Oh, here we go again, change the record. For me, not preaching what I'm about to say, preaching what I teach. Chelsea sign a goalkeeper.
Yes.
Thank God for that. Yes. Darren, the big story this week, though, was about David Moyes testing positive for COVID-19 and two of the players at West Ham also doing that. And you finding out in the middle of the actual match, which they had to leave because they'd tested positive. We won't labour on the event itself, but look at more at the implications going forward, because it was 2 days ago now, 3 days ago now. A quick word on Hull City, first of all. What was their reasoning for not taking up the West Ham offer of being tested and paying for West Ham to pay for COVID-19 screening ahead of that game?
Well, to to paraphrase the whole manager, Grant McCann, we didn't want to create a problem. We didn't want to create an issue. Now, I'm sorry, but for my money, that's not good enough at all.
So what he's saying is we didn't want to return any positive tests, so though we couldn't play players in a football match.
I'm clearly going to tread very carefully because these are matters that, you know, one word out of place and everyone goes running off to my learned friends waving bits of paper. So I have to be careful about how I interpret what he said or portray what he said.
Yeah.
But certainly listening to what he said. I'll just give you a little bit. Normally when a local journalist interviews the manager of a football club, they tend to, you know, there's a bit of a relationship, a working relationship between them. So they tend to go quite easy. The local guy, the whole local guy, he did a tremendous job interviewing Grant McCann forensically and asking difficult questions and putting all that professional relationship to one side, because these are serious matters that affect us all, not just the players, all of us who go into football stadia, who do this job. And so he was saying, you know, do you not get that this situation is bigger than the match itself? And I have to say, and I'm allowed to say, it's my opinion, for my money, Grant McCann did not treat the issue with the seriousness for me that it warranted. And he talked about the players being back in for training on Thursday for the game against Northampton on Saturday. That shouldn't be their priority, because what we see at the moment, if you look at Leyton Orient with all of those tests, positive tests, and the fact that they paid three teams in the preceding 7 days, we've got a time bomb at the back in the lower leagues, and they don't have mandatory testing. So we don't know who is going round to what club, infecting whose players, who in turn are going home and infecting God knows who else. And yes, they might well be asymptomatic, but what about the person who does contract the virus, for whom the implications are more serious, more deadly? So we got a big, big problem in the lower leagues, and we're sleepwalking into it. It's only my opinion, but I wonder whether money has a little bit to do with it.
Yeah, but that can't have anything to do with it, because surely the EFL can't fall under the auspices of elite sport if it doesn't have a testing protocol, especially if the EFL clubs are mixing with the apparently biosecure Premier League clubs who are rigorously testing on a weekly basis. It makes a mockery of the high standards of prevention that the Premier League have guaranteed when it was given permission to return to sport. If you want to be a special case, you have to act like a special case. Right, Crook?
I 100% agree with both of you, and it does worry me whether the EFL actually can continue without the sort of rigorous testing that Premier League players are subject to. Also, the EFL have got it all wrong in terms of Leyton Orient. Basically, Leyton Orient have been punished for accepting the offer of a test. They've been thrown out of the competition. They effectively weren't allowed to play their game. They didn't have enough players to play their game. Meanwhile, Hull City turned down the offer of a test paid for by their Premier League opponents, and they're allowed to stay in the competition and play their match. How can that be right?
Listen, I totally agree. And David Sullivan the other day was talking about the fact, and to paraphrase him, Premier League clubs are exposing who play against teams that don't have the test are exposing themselves to the potential of contracting the virus. And how can that be fair to them? I think the whole thing is a mess. To go back to Tuesday night, the EFL didn't confirm to us what the situation was until midway through the game. That's a joke, because, you know, all of the staff, not just the players, the stadium staff, you're all going into a stadium that's not biosecure. And all of this guff about the stadiums around the country are safer than your living room, it's just fake news.
They're not safer than your living room. If you put a bit of tape on a seat to my right hand side and say that the person who's working with me can't sit within 6 feet of me, which is fair enough because of social distancing, and then you go down and do a media scrum on a touchline, for example, at club will remain nameless, and everybody is pulled into sort of like the centre of gravity to speak to a manager, and there's about as much social distancing going on there as there is at a corner. I mean, exactly. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And unless you... Look, we're all guilty of it. Let's not pretend that we haven't broken a rule over the course of this period. We all have done it. I was doing... I did a video the other day with Andy Cole and Perry Groves, where I had a microphone and I couldn't reach too far to poke the microphone, so they were closer to me than 2 metres. They were. And I didn't think clearly enough about that before I posted that video. When I posted the video, I realised, oh my God, we're so close to each other. We cannot be that close. We obviously don't sit like that because we sit in a studio which is massive and we're miles apart. But when we did the video, we were too close. I had to pull it down because it was not the right thing to do. Ultimately, everybody is going to make mistakes over the period, but turning down testing, not testing at footballers before they go and play other footballers who are supposed to be in some sort of secure bubble, seems a very odd thing to do. And I don't, I actually, if I was West Ham United, and I know that David Moyes is the one who's picked up as positive, but they're playing against a team who haven't been tested. If I was West Ham United, I wouldn't have played the game.
Oh, I wouldn't have played the game. I'd have said, if you're not going to get tested, we're not going to expose ourselves to you, given what's gone on with the situation at Leyton Orient. And, you know, my question to both of you as well is this. If the Premier League was suspended after Mikel Arteta tested positive with a couple of players, why is the EFL, you got Neil Warnock testing positive, you got the Leyton Orient players testing positive, you don't know what the situation is with the teams that Leyton Orient played last week. I would not be surprised if Wolves had reservations about playing against West Ham on Sunday in the Premier League. This is big for football. And I think the reason why there isn't more of a focus on it is because football already has grave financial issues that it's dealing with. And this could be a nail in the coffin.
But that's not the point. It is terrible that there are going to be clubs that probably disappear. But I tell you what, they'll disappear a hell of a lot quicker if you can't play any football because you haven't tested your players. And half of them are self-isolating because they've picked up this deadly virus. And let's not pretend that it is just a cold. It isn't. Mm. You know, it kills people. We don't know the implications of it. So therefore, you know, you have to protect yourself and the people that are in your environment. And you can't keep going around saying, we need government funding, we need government help to keep our footballing alive, but actually we're not taking precautions to protect our participants. Absolutely. In elite sport. It's not, it doesn't look right for a start, but also morally, it's not the right thing to do, Crook.
Do the PFA have a role to play here in terms of the fact that EFL clubs clearly don't have the surplus finances to fund these tests, which I think cost £200
a go? The Premier League, everybody has to come together. They have to fund a testing pot. If you want to play football in this country at an elite level, then you have to be tested. If you don't, if you're not tested, you can't play. It is that simple.
Agreed. And obviously, a lot's been made of the wages that a certain PFA executive has paid himself over the last few years, so there must be money in the pot there to help protect their members by paying for them to be tested on a regular basis.
Okay, let's get to the football itself.
And it's a brilliant goal by Ali Reza, Jahan Bash. It's Brighton who make the perfect start.
We know in this league that it's difficult. We'll be humble enough about that and get back to work and do our best.
And it's a debut Donny goal that drags Manchester United back into the encounter.
It's a hard start, but then we just need to hurry up quickly because we've got to be better than what we were last week.
Our big lunchtime fixture on Talk Sports Game Day this Saturday is Brighton against Manchester United. Manchester United a little bit more zippy in midweek as goals from Mason Greenwood and Marcus Rashford sealed the deal at Luton. They take on Brighton, who impressed in their games against Chelsea and Newcastle, I think, early in this season. Brighton are a different prospect to Palace, Alex Crook, but they gave up 14 shots, Manchester United, against a counter-attacking team last Saturday. You have a foot in both camps. How will this one play out?
Well, I think Brighton will be licking their lips at that prospect when you talk about the chances United give up on the counter, because Graham Potter has got an exciting side there, full of attacking zest. Tarek Lamptey has been one of the stars of the season so far. I think he will fancy his chances up against Luke Shaw down that Brighton right-hand side. And I mean, you said United had more zip in midweek. Did they really? I thought, again, it was a pretty drab performance from the B team. Hopefully Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will pick the correct side this time, and that will be Aaron Wan-Bissaka at right back, Mason Greenwood ahead of Dan James, whose confidence is absolutely shot away. But I think Brighton will fancy their chances of making a statement. They made a statement with their performance against Chelsea. They were very good that night, and they backed it up with an emphatic win at Newcastle.
I was at the game on Wednesday night, and actually I thought, and I was at the game on Saturday night, and the comparison between the two performances is they played the ball a lot quicker. They moved it around a lot quicker, and I think the key to that was Donny van de Beek in midfield. And one matter, the combinations on the edge of the penalty area. Jesse Lingard, actually, you know, for all of his problems that he's had, he took the game to Luton. Look, he might be limited in terms of his quality, but actually his energy was there. And they need that energy. You talk about the fact that they didn't pick Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Mason Greenwood over the weekend. The reason for that was for quarantine rules. They'd had an issue where Wan-Bissaka had come back from Dubai, I think. Greenwood obviously had got himself in trouble in Iceland. As a result of that, they had to train on their own for ages and weren't up to speed with the rest of the team. So that's why they weren't picked on Saturday.
It affected Phil Foden as well, didn't it, on Monday night? He looked really short of match sharpness.
Well, different strokes for different folks, but ultimately that was the choice that they made, and that was why they weren't included in the starting
11. I put Phil Foden in my fantasy league team. I went to make a cup of tea. I came back. Where's Phil Foden gone?
No, but I'm not buying the lack of fitness, the lack of training excuse, because Manchester City finished their season equally late. They had the same issues with Foden that United had with Greenwood, and for at least 50 minutes on Monday night they looked a lot sharper, and they were always going to, because they're properly drilled and they're properly coached by a genuinely world-class manager.
Brighton will pose very different tests. Lamptey, as Crook was saying, will pose a very big problem for whoever plays at right back. It's been said by esteemed Paul Hayward, which I totally agree with. I can't remember the last time I saw a player put a zero next to his value as quickly as Lamptey, because he is a player who has shown that he has real ability. He's a joy to watch going forward. He isn't just quick with a trick, but his delivery into the box is outstanding. And I think they've got players in Neil Morpay, Alireza Jahanbakhsh, who I watched playing for Iran at the World Cup in Russia and was really impressed by. Trossard, who can score goals as well. They've got players who can cause a problem for an unconvincing United side. I think United right now, yeah, okay, they had that good run back end of last season, but they are still a side that you cannot trust. And even though they won well at Luton, you put your house on them at your peril.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides, and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
It's West Brom's first goal back in the Premier League, and it's an absolute cracker from Grady Diangana.
The Premier League is a very tough league, it's on another level from the Championship.
What a goal, and what a moment for Mason Mount and for Chelsea!
We will get better, we will train more together. The newer players who are injured, we've got quite a few injuries, will come back and you'll see a lot of things.
Spilicueta playing the ball along to depth, Abraham sets Havertz away, Havertz goes around the goalkeeper, will sweep it home for his hat-trick. Chelsea 5, Barnsley 0, Kai Havertz gets a hat-trick for Chelsea in the Carabao Cup.
Live on TalkSport at 5:30 on Saturday, it's West Bromwich Albion against Chelsea. West Brom went out of the cup on a penalty shootout to Brentford in midweek and were cut to shreds in their two Premier League games with Leicester and Everton. Far from boing-boinging, Bilic is brooding and he won't be in the dugout for this one. Now they face a retooled Chelsea with a new goalie, Chilwell and Silva raring to go. Darren, how will this one go?
They look good. West Brom look as though they are losing a little bit of confidence on the basis of their start to the season. And again, you can't really set too much store by the goal fest in the EFL Cup. It'll be a very, very different. Bilic will set up his side to frustrate, and rather than having keys to the door, Chelsea look like they've got credit cards, don't they, that they can slip in between. But I think as far as Chelsea are concerned, in that final third, I think they've got some answers to the questions.
Yeah, look, do you know what? One of the great things about watching on Wednesday night was you could now pick the game that you want to watch, can't you? If you go on the Carabao Cup website, you can just pick your game and pay for your team, which is, I know, something that they're doing with the iFollow thing in the EFL as well.
Sam, can I ask you this? Do you think fans will become so used to watching games, particularly over the winter on TV, that it'll be hard to tempt them back eventually?
No. There will always be fans that want to go to an actual football match, because it's only 60% about the match, isn't it? It's a lot more about the experience around the match. Going, meeting up with your mates, being part of a communal support where you exchange ideas and banter and frustrations all together, and you celebrate and moan on your way out afterwards in a community. So I hope that you'll never get to the situation where people get used to the watching it on a screen, so therefore don't go to a game. But in terms of watching that game, one of the things that I noticed was the combination between not Timo Werner and Kai Havertz, but Kai Havertz and Tammy Abraham, who seemed to have an almost telepathic understanding where each other were, little flicks which brought the other one into play. And look, it was Barnsley. Chelsea did score 6 goals. Barnsley haven't had a brilliant start to the season anyway. But I think they needed that confidence boost after what was quite a chastening afternoon on Sunday. And maybe for Kai Havertz, it's the perfect way to settle in, Alex.
Yeah, I'm glad you tempered your enthusiasm there by pointing out the poorness of the opposition, because for a minute I was worried for West Brom. They'd be up against the Chelsea side who just won the Champions League, the World Cup, the Kentucky Derby and the Grand National in one night.
I don't understand. You can't say that somebody played well because they were playing Barnsley.
Well, I got a bit excited when Alexis Sanchez made his Manchester United debut and fitted straight in against Yeovil Town, and look how that turned out. So I think you do need to realise that they're up against. But it's a massive confidence boost, isn't it, for Kai Havertz? And it doesn't surprise me that Tammy Abraham has come out fighting. I'm sure he feels very sore, Darren, having been one of the players who played an integral part in getting Chelsea to the Champions League against the odds last season, that he's now no longer deemed as a first-team regular by Frank Lampard. So competition for places is good, because it does make other players raise their game, and I'm sure Frank Lampard is absolutely delighted by that.
After the Lille game last year in the Champions League, where the talk was that he was going to buy players in the January transfer window, I remember asking Lampard, if you buy experienced players, what happens to your players that have got you this far? Abraham had had a great first half of the season. Mount was doing really well. James had come into the side, and he was getting all the praise for blooding the young players. But he said, this is Chelsea, and we have to expect a high level of competition for a first team place. And the players that succeed here will have been able to rise to the challenge, and the players that leave won't have been able to do that. So we're seeing now Abraham scoring goals again and basically saying, if you want my shirt, you're going to have to fight me for it. That's great for Chelsea.
Only Manchester City scored more goals than Chelsea on their travels last season. And with Havertz, Werner, Ziyech coming back, Pulisic Instagramming that it's nearly time, I suppose we expect them to click into gear. But Grady Diangana was a thorn in Everton's side last Saturday. Matias Pereira capable of something special. And they're an attack-minded team, not a team that sit behind the ball. However, they have lost 2 out of 2, West Bromwich Albion. Crook, you said on the preview podcast, there won't be two teams as bad as Bournemouth and Norwich. Is it too early to suggest that West Brom and Fulham might prove you wrong?
Yeah, I think it is too early. You know, it's difficult to make those judgments after 2 matches, although I'm going to completely go against what I'm saying there, because I do think Fulham and West Bromwich Albion already look like they're going to fill 2 of the 3 relegation places, and everybody else is playing for one other. You mentioned West Brom's attacking.
So you've just said yes to the question.
But you mentioned West Brom's attacking talents there, and they've got some great players going forward, but defensively they're a team who are always going to give you chances. They're always going to concede goals. They lack squad depth, and I think that's because finances there are very tight, and indeed if they didn't get promoted to the Premier League, may well have had big financial problems. So I feel a bit sorry for Slaven Bilic, but ultimately I just don't think they're quite good enough to compete on a regular basis in the Premier League.
Wonder if Branislav Ivanovic will play and come back to haunt Chelsea.
He's older than Darren.
McGoldrick reacts and smashes the ball home, and all 3 points are going to Sheffield United.
We're not a top team, we're a team finding its way in the division, and at the moment we're going through a little bit of sticky patch in terms of results. Two results have gone against us.
A right-footed shot and volley into the far corner, and they've equalised again. This Leeds United team do not know how to lay down.
Obviously every 2 points is going to be important in this league, and it's our first one, so I hope we can build on that.
Blows the whistle now. Here comes Matthias Klink, right-footed, just rolls it nonchalantly down the middle of the goal, as calm as you like.
It will be the first time that Leeds United have played a Yorkshire derby in the Premier League for 19 years when they take on Sheffield United live on TalkSport this Sunday at midday. Sheffield United ended last season on a bit of a downer with only 3 wins in their final 10 games. They haven't exactly set the world on fire so far this season, Crook. But again, is it too soon to judge from just 2 Premier League games and a Carabao Cup outing or two?
Well, I don't want to be and I told you so, but I did when we started doing this podcast after lockdown, that Sheffield United's bubble had burst and that they could well find themselves in trouble this season. The second season syndrome, there are countless examples. Ipswich Town under our friend Matt Holland qualify for Europe in their first season back in the Premier League, were relegated to the next. Reading almost qualified for Europe under Steve Coppell one season, were relegated to the next. It happens time and time again. I've not been particularly impressed with their recruitment this summer. I think they've signed championship level players. And I don't think it's too early to worry about Sheffield United, because you can't see where the goals are coming from. They've started to concede and make mistakes defensively, which they didn't do last season. I think it's going to be a long, hard slog for them, Darren.
Yeah, I'd agree. Although having said that, Chris Wilder is going to get tough with his players. Poor defensively in the first couple of games. He really laid into them after the Aston Villa game. And I think as far as the first 2 games are concerned, they can draw a line under them. I think they'll be harder to beat in the next couple of games. I don't think they're going to be a group of players that suffer from second season syndrome, because there's enough time in a transfer window for Chris Wilder to do something about any complacency within his ranks. I do know he's trying very hard to bring in a striker. There's a big bun fight for Rian Brewster at Liverpool. And if they don't get him, they'll go for someone else. But they do need goals, and maybe if they can do that, they can fight fire with fire.
Leeds United were pretty good on the road last season, 43 points away from home in the Championship, and they will score goals. I think you will see their defence improve as the season goes on. It was the best defence in the Championship last season. They have conceded 7 in their first 2 games, but they've also picked up 3 points. But I'm really interested in what happens on the touchline. Bielsa against Wilder. It is a contrast of characters, isn't it? It's the oddest matchup since Natalie Portman dated Moby.
Where did you pluck out that reference from?
I will just say one thing. There's a great stat about Leeds, which is that they have now, last week was 52 games where they've won when they've scored the first goal.
Yes.
Which is a fantastic stat. In and a kind of testament to the firepower that they've got in the team. Really, really pleased for Patrick Bamford. I keep saying it because I love it when an underdog basically sticks one in the eye of the people that have been having a pop, and lots of people have been doubting his ability to score Premier League goals, and I think that's now 2-2.
Right, let's look at the transfer tittle-tattle. Wolverhampton Wanderers haven't been shy with their checkbook. They signed Nelson Semedo from Barcelona, and part of the Jota deal, or separate to it, but certainly involving a negotiation with Liverpool, they brought in Kijana Hoover as well, who knows that he's going to be back up to Semedo, but he's hoping to learn from him. Let's talk a little bit about Tottenham, who are after a defender as well from Inter Milan.
Yeah, we've all been there, haven't we, when maybe we're on a night out and we come back and we find an extra £20 that we didn't know we had in our wallet. I think Daniel Levy has done that with, you know, a few hundred million. I don't know where their money's coming from all
you
of a sudden.
You have, because you're really tight. The rest of us haven't.
But obviously they brought back Gareth Bale, and then they're very much in the market now for a defender. His name is Milan Skriniar, as you say, plays for Inter Milan. €60 million is the price tag, Darren Lewis, and you're pretty confident that Daniel Levy is going to fund this deal.
The key thing with this deal is that the player wants to go to Spurs. And so there is a deal to be done. And Steve Hitchin and Daniel Levy are working on this deal. This has been the position I've been most focused on, really. Yeah, all the triumphalism about Bale, but Spurs were disappointingly abject defensively last season and a world away from the couple of seasons when they're the best defence and the joint best defence in the Premier League under Pochettino. So if they were to get Skriniar, given that they've got Reguilón and they've got Alderweireld, and at right back they have Doherty, who's been tremendously consistent for Wolves, suddenly you can see a back five worthy of the name, and then you'd start to think about Tottenham being contenders maybe for a top four place.
Chris Smalling closing in on a move to Roma. We're expecting that to happen. I know that he wants to go back to Italy. Arsenal step up their interest in Hossam Awar.
Yeah, I think he's the one that Mikel Arteta really wants. Again, I think the Arsenal owners are going to have to dig deep into their pockets.
Will it go to the last hour of the transfer window?
Do you know what? I think it might. And also it might be based on the ability to get players off the wage bill. Obviously, we know there's certain players in that midfield that are surplus to requirements. He's made that very clear. If they can find someone to take the likes of Torreira, Guendouzi, maybe even Mesut Ozil, then again, I think this is a deal that could well happen. But I do expect it to go late into the window. There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to try and agree a price tag. But my understanding is that Auer is now their top target ahead of Thomas Partey of Atletico Madrid, who's also been mentioned.
Two other quick transfer stories, which I don't think will please fans of either Chelsea or Manchester United. The first one, Bayern Munich in for Callum Hudson-Odoi. I have a text message here, and I won't reveal who it's from, but I'll say it says, no Cho to Bayern, comma, not happening.
Well, okay. I know there's interest from Bayern Munich. There was before, before he signed his new contract at Stamford Bridge. I also know there's a bit of frustration from Callum Hudson-Odoi and his representatives that he seems to be the victim of this overhaul, the revolution of Frank Lampard.
He hasn't done enough on the pitch, unfortunately. So it's all right turning around and saying that he is disappointed because they've brought in world-class or top-class performers. But actually, he hasn't done enough on the pitch yet.
But he needs to play, doesn't he? And it would worry me if I was Callum Hudson-Odoi, it would worry me that Ziyech and Pulisic have both started the season injured and he still can't really get on the pitch.
Well, he's not Kylian Mbappe. Josh King waiting on Manchester United?
Yeah, he's made it pretty clear all the way along that Manchester United is his preferred destination. The longer it drags on without any movement, I think he will be in the Bournemouth squad to take on Manchester City in the Carabao Cup on Thursday night. The more I have a nagging suspicion, it's one shared by a couple of people at Bournemouth, that he will end up at Manchester United. They made a bid in January on deadline day. It was rejected. They didn't come in with a second one. We know that they're not going to get Jadon Sancho now. They're not going to get Ousmane Dembele because Ebuba wants a €100 million player on loan without any commitment to buy. It's scraping the barrel time again. And I can just see this happening on deadline day. They run out of options. Darren Lewis and Joshua King suddenly becomes the most attractive proposition. Not for the fans, I don't think, but certainly for Ed Woodward.
Listen, if they ended up with Josh King, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. From a PR perspective, it might be. Because obviously they'd been linked with so many celebrated names. I still do think that they're going to blink first as far as Sancho is concerned and desperately offer Dortmund the money to do a deal for Sancho. I just think that if they did end up with Sancho by the end of the window and he was the only person they ended up with, I don't think that I would have any confidence in him breaking into the top four or even progressing in the Champions League, because defensively they are not good enough. And I still do think either Manchester club will do a deal for Koulibaly and take him from Napoli, and that would improve either, whichever club he goes to, he will improve them.
It's time for Roulette Rivalry. Let's speak to producer Lucy, who is going to dish out three games to each of us and test our expertise as we preview them in 45 seconds with no notes. Lucy.
Hello, you're all right?
Good, thank you. And have you been exercising this morning?
Yeah, you're only asking that because you already know what happened. I went for a lovely run this morning trying to be healthy and I ended up stacking it on South Bank.
Oh.
Scuffing my new running leggings and having some Cockney geezer go, you're right.
Oh. And were you all right?
Do you know what? I have actually got a grazed knee.
Oh, no. You didn't end up chewing the pavement, though?
My hands saved me, but I was very close to full-on face planting.
Oh, well, I'm delighted.
I'd love to have seen that.
Delighted that no one captured that on Snapchat. Right, okay, what have you got for us?
Right, okay, let's start with Alex Crook.
Why are you giving yourself a fist bump? You haven't won just because she selected you first.
I'm just getting motivated, getting in the zone, you know?
Okay, well, that'd be good.
I haven't even looked at these games, by the way, so there's no question of me cheating.
Here comes the excuses.
Preparation.
You have Burnley v Southampton.
God, it's like the gimme.
And your time starts now.
Well, let's focus on Southampton. Every season, their fans go into it with optimism, and every season that gets punctured within the first couple of matches. They've been absolutely dreadful so far, actually bar the first half an hour against Spurs on Sunday when they were more than competitive. But this high line that Ralph Hasenhüttl has adopted this season and insisted on playing against Spurs, even though they were broken down time and time again, is becoming a real problem. I think he's exposed Alex McCarthy, the goalkeeper. He wants to be a sweeper keeper, but he's not good enough with the ball at his feet, nor is Fraser Forster his number two. Actually, Angus Gunn is probably the most adroit at playing that, but he let in 9 goals against Leicester the last time he played in the Premier League. He won't get near the team.
And his dad doesn't like you.
They need some bodies in the building. They need some squad depth. Ralph is very frustrated. At the moment, it's looking like a long season for them again.
She said it about 10 seconds ago. Are you even listening?
Again, I couldn't hear it. Lucy, you need to speak up.
No, everybody else heard it. It was just you. I think you need to go and test your hearing.
I also managed not to mention Burnley once in that section.
Yeah.
Are you impressed?
Mm, not really.
You know, the last time he went on a run that bad, the last time they got humped that bad, they went on a run so good he earned a new contract.
What you're saying is all part of the master plan.
Right, what's next, Luz?
Master plan.
Darren, it's your turn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you Crystal Palace v Everton. Go.
On the face of it, you would suggest Everton would have too many guns for Crystal Palace, but they're in fantastic form, particularly given that Palace I'm talking about here, particularly given that they have been without a number of their defenders, their key defenders, over the past couple of games. So this is a hard one to call. I think it might well be a draw. Zaha stepping up to the plate. Some would say he's playing for a move. If that's the case, it's good on him because he's delivered in the last couple of games. Townsend with an assist and a goal as well. Eze getting his confidence too, but obviously they are up against a fantastic midfield. Now, I heard Sam Matterface and Steve McClaren talk about the wonderful screen of Palace's last weekend in their win over Man United. So it's going to be the irresistible force in Everton against the immovable objects of Palace in the middle of the park.
Again, the word stop doesn't apply to him apparently as well. Unbelievable. that McCarthy and MacArthur screen in front of the back four, which did very, very well at Old Trafford. Also, I thought the two wingers, Townsend and Schlupp, coming back to act as double fullbacks, protected the back line. As Matt Holland said on Monday's podcast, I wouldn't want a season ticket, but I'm impressed with the results that they get. Luce, finally.
You have Spurs v Newcastle, Sam. Your time starts now.
Okay, Tottenham Hotspur won't have Gareth Bale available for this one because he's still ambling along with an injury. Oof, didn't see that one coming. If they play like they did in the second half against Saints, then they'll rip Newcastle to shreds, Tottenham, because they were absolutely breathtaking on the counter-attack, little balls over the top to expose that Southampton high line. But Newcastle surely won't defend so high against a Tottenham team that win loads of games at home. I think they won 12 games at home last season at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Newcastle weren't very good on the road last campaign, but they started quite well down at West Ham United and suffered against Brighton at home. So it could be that they could back up last season's win at the stadium.
Oh, a word stop doesn't apply to you either, is it, son?
I've started, so I'll finish. Right, okay, let's move on. Manchester City against Leicester and West Ham Wolves take place on Sunday.
This is game day. This is Talk Sport. And it's a brilliant goal by Ali Reza, Jahan Bash. It's Brighton who make the perfect start.
And it's a debut Donny goal that drags Manchester United back into the encounter.
It's West Brom's first goal back in the Premier League. And it's an absolute cracker from Grady Diangana.
What a goal! And what a moment for Mason Mount and for Chelsea.
Fired in by Chris Wood. And Burnley take the lead.
It was an instant finish by Ings and Southampton lead.
McGoldrick reacts and smashes the ball home, and all 3 points are going to Sheffield United.
A right-footed shot and volley into the far corner, and they've equalised again.
This Leeds United team do not know how to lay down.
We're off and underway, and it is only here on Talk Sport.
Yes, Manchester City, Leicester, Sunday at 4:30, West Ham, Wolves, 7 p.m. I love these Sundays in the studio, watching all the games with Andy Cole on TalkSport. Absolutely superb. Leicester can go on the front foot in an attacking sense against Manchester City, but ultimately, defensively, they won't have enough to keep City out, will they, Crook?
No, I think you summed it up quite nicely there. Although, Manchester City did struggle to see the game out against Wolves, and in the end, based on what we saw in the second half, the scoreline probably flattered them. I'm sure Pep Guardiola will be hoping to get one or two of his injured players back. If they play like they did in the opening 45 minutes with De Bruyne and Sterling running the show, then I think Leicester will be in trouble. And it's going to be interesting to see how Brendan Rodgers prepares for this game. Does he send his team out to hit them on a counter-attack? Does he try and start on the front foot? Or does he just try and stay in it for as long as possible? It's going to be really interesting.
Leicester haven't tweaked too much in terms of personnel from last year, Darren, but in Harvey Barnes, they've seen someone who's come to the fore at the back end of last campaign and the beginning of this.
Yeah, absolutely. But the only problem for Leicester is that while Barnes has improved and a couple of others as well, they haven't really freshened up enough up front. And although they do have the pace and the work rate of Jamie Vardy, they don't have too much in reserve. And so if Vardy doesn't score, are there enough goals in that Leicester team to see off somebody of the calibre of Manchester City? I do agree with what you've both been saying. City at the back are there to be got at until they solve their defensive problems. I think this might be a draw.
What do you think about the lack of Aguero and how much it's going to hurt Manchester City? Not necessarily in this game, because Jesus might fancy himself against a Leicester back line. He's got support from Sterling. But ultimately, going forward in the big matches without having someone of Aguero's stature, are they going to struggle a little bit when it comes to the big matches?
I wonder, and I'm going to kick myself for saying this, but I wonder if they're going to make a big move for a big striker before the end of the window. All I think is this. I think City have to look long-term, whether Aguero comes back fit or not. You know, he's not getting any younger. They need a striker that's going to be there for the next 4 or 5 years. I mean, it'll be harder now, given the ambition that Spurs are showing to get a Kane out of Spurs. I don't think he would want to leave. I think he would want to play with Gareth Bale and Son, and you know, with the defenders that are coming in and the quality in that squad now. I think he would want to stay at Spurs. Certainly, City do need to be looking at their striking options, because, as you say, Jesus might be all right for games like this, but in the big games where you need ice in your veins and the kind of calibre and quality that Aguero provides, Jesus is not for me.
West Ham Wolves is a Sunday night game, 7 o'clock start. We've done the politics and satisfied the news cycle. What about the game? I think Diop is a massive miss. And David Sullivan said so when he was on TalkSport this week, Crook.
Yeah, because he played really well against Arsenal. West Ham played really well against Arsenal and can count themselves unlucky. My concern is, are they capable of producing that performance week in, week out? Are they going to have to in these next batch of games? Because I think their next five matches are all against teams who finished in the top eight last season.
Yeah.
It needs discipline, it needs character. And the trouble is also, it needs the players in reserve, the likes of Sebastian Allaire, Yarmolenko and Lanzini, when they are called into action, when the first 11 are tiring, to actually come on and be able to play in that disciplined way. They didn't really do it against Arsenal, because if you watch the winning goal, it came from the left-hand side because Yarmolenko had switched off. That's a problem for David Moyes, or indeed for whoever is in the dugout. I think David Moyes is going to be taking charge by telephone in this game. And I was impressed with Wolves in the second half against Manchester City. They were sluggish to get going in the first half. That was possibly partly because Manchester City really came flying out the traps. I was really impressed press with Daniel Pedence. I think he gives them a different option in terms of breaking the lines. Jimenez looks like he's going to score goals as he always does. They brought in Semedo. That's an excellent signing. I think Wolves, again, are managing to regenerate themselves despite the fact they've lost Doherty and Jota, two mainstays under Nuno Espirito Santo, and you have to doff your cap to them for that.
Is it an excellent signing, that Semedo signing? Or is it? Or do we just get excited about it because they spent 27 million going to 37 million, depending on add-ons, and it's from Barcelona? The truth is that Barcelona wanted to get rid of him.
Yeah, but he's been there and got the T-shirt. He's won two La Liga titles. He's won the Nations League with Portugal. So he has the right pedigree. Clearly, Wolves are not a club competing in the same sphere as Barcelona. So just because you're not good enough for Barcelona doesn't mean you're not good enough for Wolverhampton Wanderers. Also, they've just released a third kit, which is basically the Portugal away strip. So they may as well sign another Portuguese player.
They may as well just send all the Wolves players to the European Championships as Portugal. I like Jared Bowen playing for West Ham United. I really enjoy watching him. I thought it was brilliant when he was at Hull. And the fact that he's come... I worried that he'd made the wrong move to the Premier League, but maybe West Ham is the club that really suits him. I know Crook caused a bit of a ruckus last week with his delusions of grandeur comment. I just think the fans want them to look like West Ham having a go. Darren, do you buy into David Salomon's argument, though, and he mentioned this on TalkSport, that the fans wanted a director of football and a world-renowned manager, so we gave them that and it didn't work. We gave in and gave them Pellegrini, and now we've gone back to basics and looked for a more traditional solution where the manager, David Moyes, is the manager and he picks the players. He decides who they sign. He says, here are the targets, go and get them for me.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And the fans obviously aren't happy with the ownership, and that's a separate issue. But the facts are that the ownership did back Pellegrini with a huge amount of money, and Pellegrini let not just the ownership but the club down with poor players, stuck by the goalkeeper for far too long. Didn't have the side defending set pieces properly, wasn't even focusing on. I remember being in press conferences and we were saying, look, you cannot defend balls into the box. What are you going to do about it? And he didn't seem to see that there was a problem. And
did
it was the wrong manager.
Because he did that to me a couple of times.
No, it wouldn't have surprised us. He may as well have done, because the answers he were given. He was the wrong man because he just lacked the dynamism to manage a club like West Ham. Yeah. And that's what you need. There is an energy there. There is a passion at their club. And I hate normally that word passion, because it kind of, what does that mean? But I think you need to see the issues and deal with them. And he could not do either. And I think as far as the transfer policy was concerned under him, it was shambolic. And now David Moyes is paying a price, but they need to stick with him because they look far better and far more promising with him in the team. Yeah, with him in at the touchline.
And you talk about understanding the sort of tactical nuances of the game. I mean, David Moyes is very much like a slightly different coach, and he's a bit more pragmatic than someone like Manuel Pellegrini, but he knows. I've spoken to him about it. He gets into the situation where they're in games, they're doing okay. If he makes a change, and people are always sitting there saying, oh, it's 1-1 or whatever, bring on Yarmolenko, bring on a number 10 or Anderson or someone to change the game or whatever. But he knows that if he does that, the likelihood is that one of those players who he's got in reserve, one of these tricky wingers, is going to make the mistake that turns the game back the other way. And he's been concerned about that for a very, very long time. And it was illustrated on Saturday night, where he brings on Yarmolenko, okay, does well going forward, but ultimately he makes the mistake which allows Arsenal back in front. And that is so frustrating, because I know that that is something that has plagued him at the back of his mind for such a long time. It will be a good game though, West Ham against Wolves on Sunday. In fact, we've got some cracking games over the weekend. And then we'll be back on Monday. That's about it from us. Game day is back on Saturday. We've got those three live Premier League games on TalkSport and TalkSport 2. We will be back when you wake up on Monday morning to review all the action with Darren Bent, and to look ahead to Monday's key clashes. Arsenal take on Liverpool away from home, and we'll get all the reaction to a fantastic weekend of football. Goodbye.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds, we set them. Form guides, we've got them. Expert opinions, we share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.